And you're still listening to Willamette Wake Up here on the Muse KMUZ 88.5 100.7. Now it's time for the inaugural fourth Friday Focus with the Oregon Center of Public Policy. And our special guest today is Juan Carlos Ordonez. And Juan Carlos has been a freelance journalist, a Harvard Law School graduate, a commercial litigation lawyer, and has worked in Guatemala, where he supported numerous civic projects focused on sustainable development of indigenous communities. And he is communications director, I believe, for the Oregon Center for Public Policy. Juan Carlos, can you hear us?
Yes. Hi, Mark. Thanks for the wonderful introduction.
Well, thanks for your wonderful work. And our topic today is education funding, and Oregon Center for Public Policy has been involved in a project with the Greater Schools Great Community Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the project you've just recently completed?
Yes, this is a collaboration between the Oregon Center for Public Policy and the Oregon League of Women Voters. We have been touring the state, talking to communities about the state of our schools here in Oregon, how it is that they are, how different communities see schools in terms of their performance and what they want out of their schools for their communities and for their kids. And in these conversations, and we've traveled to probably about 8 different places across the state, from the coast to the valley to eastern Oregon, what emerges from these conversations is that our public schools touch the lives of just about everybody in our community. They really are a pillar of our communities. And if we're not funding them adequately, if we're not providing our schools adequate resources, our foundation is weak. And unfortunately, that is the case. We've heard from a lot of community members across the state tell us about the shortcomings of our public schools, not because there's not motivated teachers. To the contrary, there's great and wonderful things that teachers are and other school employees are doing every day. But rather, it's a problem of, at the end of the day, a problem of insufficient resources.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sure. One of the hallmarks of Oregon Center for Public Policy is your slogan, "Where Facts Matter." And I thought maybe it'd be a good time for you to introduce some facts about Oregon school funding.
Yes, there was a very good analysis done last year by the Oregonian in terms of school performance and school funding, and the story compared Oregon to the rest of the nation. And what, after crunching the numbers, what the paper found was that Oregon ranked 38th nationally in terms of performance. And 39th in terms of per-student spending. And that article made it very clear that really at the end of the day, you get what you pay for. The paper said that states that spend more get better results. And here in Oregon, unfortunately, we're not spending enough right now.
And in your analysis, you showed where does Oregon rank both in performance and in funding?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so 38th in performance and 39th in per student funding. You know, and one of the ways that this lack of resources manifests itself is Oregon has the nation's third most crowded classrooms.
Hmm.
So we have on average about 6 more kids in a classroom than the national average. We're also happen to provide our kids less instructional time overall. Oregon is known for having shorter school years, and indeed, when you add up all the time that a child in Oregon receives from the moment they enter the first grade through the time that he or she leaves the 12th grade, that child will have received almost a year less of instructional time.
Wow, I can see school kids around the country saying, around the state saying, yes, more summer vacation.
Yeah, maybe so. The thing, though, is that the research also shows that time in the classroom matters in terms of performance. And it is reducing the amount of instructional time is particularly harmful for kids who are most at risk, for the kids who really need extra attention.
And it also affects, you know, what percentage of our kids go on to college and stuff like that.
Yeah, it affects our overall, academic achievement, both in terms of sort of just the course off the lack of another problem that we've noticed, both in the research and in the conversations with community members, is that our kids are lacking in terms of sort of the variety of course offerings that mm-hmm. prepare them for the future, that makes them more rounded citizens, that allows, say, kids with particular skills, creative skills, to develop those. There's insufficient science, technology, and engineering and math courses, the STEM courses, which prepare kids for the future. There's in a host of ways, we're shortchanging our kids here in Oregon.
And I also saw that other that related new term, new to me, STEAM, which is the STEM programs, including the arts.
Yes. In fact, the better term is STEAM, to include the arts, and because we know that arts are very important, both in allowing kids to develop their creative side, but also fulfill their to help them develop their cognitive skills. And, you know, in conversations that we've had with communities, the lack of arts in our schools, bubbles up to the surface. We heard from communities that there's schools without a music teacher, and others sort of just not offering a wide variety of art courses.
In your travels and discussions and analyses, have you found that this funding problem and overcrowding problem is loaded in the urban school districts, the rural school districts? Is it spread evenly throughout? Is there some places that are really, really trouble spots, way more out of the outliers from the norm?
From our conversations, and we probably have not visited enough communities to make a real definitive statement, but it seems a problem that's throughout the state in terms of lacking resources. Granted, there are some very good public schools in certain places in our state. They tend to be in those wealthier communities that have additional sources that they can bring to bear. But nevertheless, it seems both in the cities and in the more rural areas that we visited, where parents and community members point out the lack of resources.
So primarily, it's not desire, effort, or love of schools. It's the biggest single problem has been funding.
It is funding, and it's a problem that has been festering in Oregon for quite some time now. It's a problem that really dates back to 1990 and to the enactment of Measure 5, which drastically changed our property tax system. That measure capped property tax rates and then shifted the main funding responsibility for our schools away from local communities and put that responsibility on the shoulders of the state government. And unfortunately, over the years, the state government has not held up its part of the bargain. So school funding has eroded over time, to the extent that now we are severely underfunding our schools.
Now, also in your report, you talk about the added impact of the Measure 50. Can you explain that?
Sure. So Measure 5 was enacted in 1990, capping property tax rates. And in 1997, voters came back with another constitutional amendment that layered yet another limitation on property taxes. That measure did a number of things, not just further limit property taxes, but for the story of school funding, that's the main key of it. So as a result of both of those measures, there's very little room for communities to boost funding for their local schools. And now the main funder of our schools in Oregon is the state government, and it does so mainly through the state budget.
And about what percentage of the schools, I guess it would be K-12, are funded from the state versus local property taxes?
Yeah, about half the money, roughly half the money, comes from the state. And then the federal government puts in about 9%, and then the rest comes from local sources, mainly the property tax. So it is the state government that really is the main funder at this point. And that is mainly through the state budget, which is the main funding vehicle.
Well, this is interesting to me. Now, maybe you have a much better handle on the history. Do you see these property tax limitations as popular movements that sprouted from people just being tired of tax on their property, or did you see it as a move by business to lower taxes in the state, as is their general want to do, to maybe attract workers or whatever, for whatever reason? What's your feeling on the source of this drive to keep our property taxes so low?
Well, my understanding of it, and I haven't done in-depth research on this piece, but, you know, in the 1990s, not just in Oregon, there was, you know, what they call a tax revolt. A lot of folks started seeking to limit property taxes at a time when home values were rising rapidly. Property taxes were rising in tandem, and putting some folks felt they were rising too fast. So these measures were put in place, but they were rather not very, didn't have much foresight. They're rather crude instruments that have really put our state in a bind.
And I find, of course, we have similar discussions when we're talking about city government funding because of those limitations.
Right, because it's because it's the same source. I mean, it's not just school funding that as a result of these property tax measures, it's communities have little room to raise funding for schools, but other local priorities as well. So it's not just school funding that has suffered as a result.
Well, you folks have done some analysis on solutions, and you've tried to analyze the major sources of tax revenue that might occur. And could you give us a real quick rundown of OCPP's sort of your analysis of what funding mechanisms would be most appropriate and with our best ability to implement?
Sure. But before I answer that, I think it's helpful to sort of set up the context in terms of sort of how much money our schools need to really bring up all schools in Oregon up to an adequate level of funding. Fortunately, we have a reasonable estimate put together by a state commission, and that figure is about $2 billion per budget period.
Mm-hmm.
That according to these analysts, would be enough to bring all Oregon schools up to an adequate level of funding, not schools with all the bells and whistles, but enough to give every child a decent education. And so $2 billion is the figure. Of course, that does not include establishing a pre-K system here in Oregon, which we do not have, or making higher education affordable once again. So it's really just getting our K through 12 schools in decent shape. So $2 billion. So where are you going to find that kind of money? You know, one could think about sales taxes or property taxes, which definitely have the potential to raise a lot of money. The problem is that apart from certain inequities that come with those systems, there's a real practical problem in that the polls show that voters are not going to go down that road. A sales tax proposal in Oregon has failed 9 times at the ballot already, and it's highly unlikely that the 10th time would be the charm. So the other possibilities would be, say, raising income taxes, and there may be appetite for raising income taxes on high-income households. But at the end of the day, unless you raise the taxes really high, you're not going to get enough revenue to fully fund our schools here in Oregon. So that leaves as the only really viable option raising corporate taxes. And there's a lot of room to raise corporate taxes in Oregon. Corporate taxes over the decades have really eroded, both in terms of the income taxes paid by corporations and property taxes. So, in terms of the practical aspects of it, polling in Oregon and nationally consistently finds that voters believe that corporations are not paying their fair share. So both in terms of where you can find the money and actually get it accomplished, looking to corporations to contribute more seems to be the way to go if we want to have great schools here in Oregon.
Well, plus I think your analysis showed if you wanted to get that $2 billion a year via the property tax, you'd have to raise them like 50%. Was that?
That's right. We would have to. Yeah, that's right. So it would be a significant increase in property taxes to get to that level.
Well, and of course, on corporate taxes, according to your analysis, corporate taxes in the mid-70s used to contribute 18% to the state general fund, and that's down to 6%.
Yes, there's been a really dramatic decline in the relative contribution of corporations. And this is, it's due to a number of causes, but certainly some of that is the fact that corporations have been very effective at gaming the tax system. They have an army of lawyers, accountants, and lobbyists that are very good at getting their taxes reduced, or maybe more accurately, getting a lot of tax credits and deductions and subtractions put in place into our tax code, and that has really eroded the tax contributions of corporations.
And I notice there is some precedent for if we did, say, initiative petition, we've voted to raise corporate taxes in the past, at least on a temporary basis.
Yeah, in 2010, January 2010, Oregon voters enacted measures 66 and 67. And 67 raised corporate taxes. It was a modest, in the large scheme of things, a modest increase to the Oregon's corporate minimum tax. And there were temporary rates that were higher than where they eventually settled. But nevertheless, we did get an increase to corporate taxes. So it demonstrates that Oregon voters appear inclined, or at least there is the possibility of raising taxes on corporations, that's something that voters will support.
Now, I would think you've done some surveys with corporations, and it seems like business community in Oregon believes that a strong, educated workforce is important to their bottom line.
Yes. If you read the Oregon Business Plan, which reflects the thinking of Oregon's largest business groups, it says that education is at the top of the priority list as a fundamental ingredient for economic prosperity. So the business community certainly understands the importance of education. We talked before about schools and how they benefit the development of kids, but education is also key for laying a it's the foundation of our state's economy. If the research shows that the best thing a state can do in terms of creating the foundation for future prosperity, it is investing in education. So this is something that the idea that we need to invest and have a really top-notch education system, it's something that crosses the political aisle. It's something that the business community understands. It's something that community members understand. There seems to be no controversy in that. The sticking point is how we actually find the money to invest in our schools, and that has been the sticking point for some time.
Well, there's an option sort of on the table, I believe, that the legislature sent out to the voters. Would you like to give a brief introduction to that? And then later on a future episode, we can talk more in more detail about it.
Sure. Last week, the A Better Oregon campaign filed enough signatures to refer Initiative Petition 28 to the ballot. And what IP28 would do is raise taxes on basically the largest corporations in our state. Most of them would be multinational, multi-state corporations. This proposal would levy a 2.5% tax on Oregon sales above $25 million a year. So those, and it only affects what are called C corporations. So if a business is incorporated as a limited liability partnership or an S corporation, they would not be affected, even if they have sales over $25 million. And then if you are a C corporation with sales under $25 million, you're not affected. So it's going to the estimates are that about 1,000 corporations would be affected. And the ones that would really be carrying the load are the really big ones, sort of the Walmarts, Home Depots, Verizons of the world. It is to them that that we would be looking for increased funding, really. That's who would be mainly affected by this proposal.
Would it be fair to say that most of the revenue would be generated by corporations that are headquartered or based outside of Oregon?
That's right, yeah. Most of the companies impacted are headquartered, would be headquartered out of state.
Well, I suppose that there might be some ability to get some support behind that. And thanks for the correction. That was an initiative petition and not sent out by the legislature.
That's right, yeah. This is something that Better Oregon has been going around the state collecting signatures, so it is going to be an initiative petition. Yeah, and there's the campaign collected way more signatures than was required, and there appears to begin with a significant amount of support. So we will see over the months to come what happens.
Well, Juan Carlos Ordóñez, thank you so much for this conversation. It's the first of our ongoing series, Fourth Friday Focus with Oregon Center for Public Policy. And thank you so very much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's been great.
Yeah, and I look forward to talking to you next month. And we're going to go out with a little tune here, I think quite appropriate here, with Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well.